Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, we're back. Welcome back. We're talking.
I know. It's been a long time. I've been on vacation. You lost internet, I think, for a long period of time.
Oh, my God. I lost internet. My computer stopped working. Technology was against me for a good month and a half. I've rebuilt my computer twice in the last 2 months.
That sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it was great.
And for those that are going to wonder, yes, he does have a Mac. So, Before everyone's like, just get a Mac, so.
Yeah, have a Mac. It died. It's old. I mean, I got it in, like, 2011, so. But they basically have replaced everything. So it kind of should be a new computer at this point.
See, I don't understand how it is that, like, 2011 is now old. Like, back in my day, you know, it used to be, like, you'd have a computer for, like, 5-6 years. And like, I'm going through one a year because I'm on it so much. It's not good.
And, like, the video work we do and stuff, like, these are all... Well, all right. First of all, I hate when people are like, oh, it's a first world problem. Yes, we live in the first world. So you and I are going to have first world problems. That's just usually how it works. It's unlikely I'm going to have a third world problem. But yeah, we do so much video that the guy who at the Apple store was like, oh, this is a great, you know, this is a great computer. You know, it's really dying on you and stuff. I was like, yeah, you know, I do a lot of video work. He's like, oh yeah, that'll do it. I'm like, I didn't even finish my sentence, and you're already like, yep, that's why the computer's falling apart.
Can't do video on it in 2011. I don't know. People have been asking like constantly, when are you gonna do a pod? When are you gonna do a pod? So I don't even know where to start. I mean, when you and I last talked, it's like we lived in a different league. Like LeBron was probably going back to the Heat, and then
didn't he? He went to the Heat.
That's what happened, right? And now the league is very different now.
It's very different. It's still West heavy, I would say, but the East has been shaken up, and it's weird because I feel like I have a handle on everything that's gone down, and yet know nothing that happened.
See, and I feel like I know what happened, but I have no handle on anything. I feel like I'm like, well, I know Pau Gasol is in Chicago now. That happened. I know that for sure. Like, I know the rosters.
Yeah.
But if you were to say, like, how good are the Bulls going to be? Pretty good? Really good? Somewhere between pretty good and really good.
Right.
And then...
That seems like going out on a limb, but I think we'll accept it.
And, like, I've got people already asking questions like, okay, so over-under win totals, and how many wins for this team, and who's going to win the Eastern Conference Finals, Chicago versus Cleveland? And I'm like, guys, like, August is when you try and decipher and come to – it's basically getting in the rhythm of understanding where new guys are. That's what a lot of – at least for me it is,
right,
is getting used to writing Cleveland Cavaliers star LeBron James, because it's – took me like 5 times to write that and be like, okay, this is a thing. I'm just trying to figure out where everything fits, and then September is when, like, and we'll start formulating kind of opinions probably today, and then kind of go through. I don't know, you seem to be you're typically assertive. Do you feel like you know a lot of where you're going to land on how guys are going to do, or do you have to think about it some more?
I still have to think about it. Like, I feel like I have a pretty good handle. There's still some things, like, I was writing something on the Orlando Magic last night, and at a certain point I was like, Jameer Nelson's somewhere. I'm going to look up where he is. And so I just went to his Wikipedia page. Like, I didn't even search, like, news. I just went to, like, Wikipedia, typed in Jameer Nelson, and turns out he's on the Mavericks. So good pickup by them. He's on a two-year deal. But, like, there are certain, like, little things like that where I'm like, I had no idea they picked him up. And I don't know how I didn't know, because I feel like I cover the NBA for a living in some capacity. I feel like that's something I should know. But so there's still things here and there. But I don't know. Like, I feel like I have a good handle on the Western Conference. I think the East is a little tougher to grab, because – we still have, like Cleveland's going to be great. Chicago's going to be great as long as they're healthy. I still think Miami's very good. I think Brooklyn can be really good still, because I like that roster with Lionel Hollins. The Hornets should still be very good. They look like they've improved a lot to me. The Raptors and Wizards are still there. The Hawks, if healthy, last year they were the third seed when you know, Horford went down. Like, I think, you know, the Pistons could be a playoff team, and it wouldn't shock me. Like, I'm very insecure about knowing, like, 3 through 12 of the East, I feel like. But, like, the West, I feel good about the West.
before we get into to that, I did want to just, I just looked it up in our email threads. July 24th, Zach Harper report: Mavericks meeting with Jameer Nelson, expected to sign him.
I mean, that guy probably wrote a decent post on it. I don't remember any of it.
It's not the best, but it's like that, right? I've had that a few times too, where I was like, "Who wrote that thing?" And I was like, "I wrote that thing." Okay, because it's been crazy, and it just seems like this is going to be the standard for off seasons now. That the trade deadline has become the off season, and this is what it's going to be like. It's just going to be because even like saying Kevin Love was traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers to join LeBron James. Like, that's just a big sports statement. Yeah, that's a big sentence.
And we talked about it. We talked about it so much, like in posts and online, you know, on Twitter and stuff. And it's like, we talked about it so much, and then like it finally happens. You're like, oh, we should talk about this. Like, even though we've been talking about it for 2 months.
Well, and it's weird too, because it's a lot about the dynamics of what does Cleveland want, what does Minnesota want. How is this going to work out? Who's going to feel slighted? And then we started actually, like, you know, my take was more to be like, okay, so, like, what are the concerns? Like, it's going to be inexperience and defense. And then I haven't really had a chance. And there was a really good article written on online on about the pick and roll with those guys.
Yeah.
And that was on Paroxysm and a really good breakdown. But just thinking about, like, LeBron, like, Kevin Love's going to be grabbing rebounds and throwing outlet passes to LeBron. Like, yeah. That's nuts.
Also, like Deion Waiters is going to be really good in that leak out role. Like, if you think about it, like they and the funny thing, it's like, how are these guys going to fit together? You know, it looks like it's going to be good. Like, you know, there's no defense, there's the experience, blah blah blah. It's like, this team's going to score like 115 points per 100 possessions.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think, like, at least in the regular season, the defense just isn't going to matter. In the playoffs, it will obviously matter, especially if they get to the finals. But I just look at this offense, I'm like, all right, Chris Bosh was awesome in the pick-and-pop game. Kevin Love's a much better pick-and-pop player because you can pop him to 24 feet.
Yeah.
And it just spreads the floor. And it's like, all right, so he runs it with Kyrie. He runs it with LeBron. He can roll on pick-and-rolls. Like, there's just so much stuff you can do. I just think, like, David Blatt's, you know, kind of a genius. Like, this is just offensively – it's just going to fit so perfectly, and it really does give me the point of like, all right, well, with the Mavericks last year, this is obviously different tiers and different expectations, but the Mavericks were just like, all right, we're going to outscore you. Like, we can't really defend, but we're going to outscore you, and it's going to be fine because our offense is so good. And now you have that, like, that can get you the eighth seed in the West, but in the East, like, that could get you to the finals.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. And then, like, you know, back when we talked, Paul George was a very healthy, good all-star player.
Yeah,
and like, you know, just like everything has changed. It seems like every 2 weeks there's a major, you know, component to the Eastern Conference, like either being taken away or being added. And it's just like, I don't know. It's bewildering. And I'm frankly quite dizzy from it.
Dizzying is a good word. It's been a dizzying offseason. The Cavs are going to be, I think, really entertaining. It's weird because I keep thinking about it in terms of if you shift priorities down, how things get. And I wrote a big thing about defense over the weekend, and the biggest complaint people had was like, well, is LeBron that good at defense anymore? And my argument would be, well, yeah, I think he had a bad year last season. I think his real plus minus probably isn't indicative of how good he played, more indicative of how much they struggled because of the weight that he had to carry with Wade being gone so much. But even then, like, Waiters no longer has to take the primary offensive threat. LeBron can guard the primary offensive threat, and he's got help behind him. Waiters can then take the second perimeter threat, which means that all you have to do is stick Kyrie on X shooter that's only going to spot up, and you've effectively hidden Kyrie Irving on defense.
Right.
That's huge. Anderson Varejao and Sean Marion are going to take a lot of time, and if they add Mecca Okafor or another center, they're going to be the ones guarding the primary post threat, which means Kevin Love can guard the stretch four or whatever secondary weapon that you have. And if you're in a jam with somebody that's a really good, powerful, tough power forward that's giving Love fits, you can play LeBron at four and have Love guard again. It's very rare that you have a dynamic three and a dynamic four. So whichever is the lesser option, Love can pretty much just guard them. And as long as he gives good effort, which I think he gave better effort last season than he ever has, you can hide him effectively. And if you hide those two, like, part of it is I was looking yesterday, like, per 100 stats. I went on this thing about big men, so I was looking at all these per 100 stats. And, like, I forget how amazing Varejao was in 2013 before he got hurt. Like,
yeah, he was killer in 2013 before he went down. And that's to me, that's the biggest question. It's not how is Kevin Love going to defend on this team. It's is Anderson Varejao going to defend next to him?
Yeah. And, you know, Varejao really was an all-star worthy player that season. And I think that he's a much better player than he was when LeBron was there the first time. And that's going to be really huge for them. Their rebound rates are going to be absurd. It's interesting because of we thought like this Heat, the Heat team when they got together was going to be like this mind-blowing, unbelievable, world-changing, great team. And in reality, if you look back, it seemed at like 2011 it was like whoa, slow down. Like this is really hard. You have to make things fit.
Right.
There's a lot of concerns. But then you look at it, it's like well, 2013 they won 27 games in a row.
That still sounds like a lot.
So and it, you know they won two titles and won 27 games in a row. So you still have to qualify that team as like a really great team. My thing is I think that Cleveland's probably going to have a lot of challenges. I'm not saying that they won't make the East. I haven't decided between them and Cleveland yet. I haven't decided whether they'll win the East, but they're going to have a great shot. It's going to be really entertaining. Waiters is going to benefit, I think, a lot. I think he's going to be open. I think he'll actually get a lot of freedom from the attention that everyone else is going to draw. Kyrie seems like he's pulling the Nick of Time act, where basically it's like, oh, I've been kind of a jackass and really haven't been a good leader, and I've been mostly concerned with partying in Vegas and not really give. And you know, Cavs leadership was kind of concerned about whether he was going to resign there or not. Oh, hey, we got LeBron, great teammate now. So
yeah, I as much crap as he still for some reason gets, like, LeBron pulls things together. He is a really good leader. You know, I don't know that he's a Jordan leader or whatever, like all that other crap. But like in today's NBA, he's a really good leader that pulls things together. He pulled together that, you know, that Miami team, and it took some, you know, it took the humbling and all that, and it took the Dallas series to get him to figure that out on the next level. But he did it, and I think he can bring that there. And I don't know that it means it's so hard to the Celtics were able to pull it together in that first year, right? When they bring in KG, they bring in Ray Allen, but those guys were also like considerably older and you know had gone through enough bumps and bruises where they kind of knew that where that step was that they had to take and how to take it. It just they needed the talent around them to take it, and they did that, and they won the title. That first year of these teams coming together, even looking at Houston of last year, you know, people kill them because they have all these flaws. I look at them like, yeah, but what are they going to look like in their second year? And that's the thing, like it's always all this short-term stuff, but this Cleveland thing is a thing that's going to be at least, you know, 5 years, assuming LeBron doesn't just troll everybody and go somewhere else in 2 years. Like this is a long-term commitment and a long-term project, and even more long-term than, you know, than the Miami Heat conglomeration. And I think that we're getting to a point where, like, yes, there will be flaws the first year, and that's important, and you know, we're going to have to analyze that and all that stuff. But like, God, 2-3 years from now, look at this team. Like, look at what they have.
And part of it for me is also, like, everyone wants to focus on good. And I'm like, how fun is this going to be? Like,
yes.
Looking at, you know, we talked about the East. And I was on NBA Serious Radio this morning with Joel Myers. And he asked me, he was like, do you think this is a two-team race in the East? And I was like, I honestly don't. Because Chicago has all the talent in the world. But all of it hinges upon a guy who has not been able to stay on the floor for 2 years. It's a long time. Yeah. They're hinging a lot on Rose. Rose goes down, and even with Powell, that team does not look as good.
I mean, you know, Rose goes down, they could still be a 4-seed, but that doesn't mean anything.
Right.
You know, like, that's cool for your regular season. That doesn't mean anything when you get to the playoffs.
You know, and meanwhile, you've got – I keep looking at Atlanta and just being like, they were the third seed last year despite having a poor defense because they were still understanding the concepts, getting used to a lot of new players. And by the end of the season, they had figured out so much even without Horford, and they're getting Horford back. Like, no one – it's really hard to get casual fans to understand how good Al Horford is and how much of a difference he makes. But especially, it's not just on normal teams. Like, he made Mike Woodson's teams really good.
Yes.
What's he going to do with this one with Mike Budenholzer that's now a five-out team? I think Adrian Payne is underrated as a prospect and is going to actually give them something.
I love him so much.
Teague did, like, I went back and watched a lot of Teague video, and he really did make a lot of strides in some key areas last year. He's never going to be a star, but there's no reason that he can't be in that 15 to 20 range, which is still pretty good in the league. That's how deep point guards are. And then, you know, I went through all these teams, and I was like, well, Charlotte, you know, they're going to have Al Jefferson and Lance Stephenson. So now they've got some balance. Their shooting should probably be a little bit improved. You've got Washington, which they're going all in. They've got Pierce now, and they've got Beal and Wall with a year under their belt and some playoff experience. And then I said all these teams, and I completely forgot about the Miami Heat, who still have Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh.
Yeah, I was looking at that team. I'm like, all right, I mean – I'm sold on Spoelstra. I think most people should be. I think he's one of the, you know, one of the best coaches in the league. And I look at him, I'm like, you're telling me this guy can't figure out how to make that team be a top three team in the East? Like, with all that talent? And to me, like, and this is, you know, sometimes the drop-off is indicative of the future and the immediate future. But sometimes it's just a bad year. It's just a bad finish or whatever. And I look at this, like, a year ago, there was that really weird story about how, like, Kevin Durant said James Harden should replace Dwayne Wade as a top 10 player. And everybody freaked out. And now try having that conversation today of saying James Harden should replace Dwayne Wade in the top 10 players list in the league. And one, like, people would freak out that you would even include James Harden. And two, they would freak out that Dwayne Wade's even included. And, like, right. Wade had a good year when he was on the court. I think they went about the wrong way of managing his games missed and his minutes. I think he should have played more games and fewer minutes, and I think maybe they'll, you know, in like a Spurs kind of way, like Spurs take games off, but they manage the minutes in a way where they're not missing, you know, 28 games in a season. And I think that if you can kind of get Wade into more of that, and he's allegedly, you know, in great shape and all this stuff, yeah, I just think, like, I think Wade has become insanely underrated right now. And I think Bosh is someone that people are kind of realizing, like, oh yeah, this guy's ridiculously good. And, you know, Luol Deng is filling in for LeBron, and that's not going to mean that they're a title contender, but, and I don't think the Heat are a title contender, but I think they're a team that could easily be the third best team in the East.
I mean, Luol Deng is their third best player. That's really good.
That's not bad. I also, like, I know he had a crappy end to the year too, but I think Mario Chalmers is better than people give him credit for. Like, I look at the talent on this team, and I'm worried about the Heat being able to make outside shots consistently because they've lost a lot of shooting. But I think they'll find a way
to Cleveland.
To Cleveland specifically. But I think they'll find a way to make up for that in other ways. I love the McRoberts addition. I'm not going to pretend that Danny Granger is going to give them anything. If he does, that's great, but I don't think you can rely on that at this point. But I don't know. They've got a pretty good roster, especially compared to the rest of the East.
How good would a 4-5 Heat-Hornets matchup be? Like, that would be – like, versus last year, that would be really good.
I really do hope we get, like, a Heat-Cleveland series in the playoffs. It's crazy that – like, I know there would be bloodshed and all this stuff, but – and it would be a social media wildfire, but I kind of want that to happen no matter what.
Well, it's weird because everyone kind of talks about that, and like, that's a Christmas game, and I'm kind of lukewarm on it from the perspective of, it's not like Wade and Bosh are like, screw you, buddy. They're like, that's understandable.
Like, yeah, like, well, I think, like,
it's cool, buddy.
Yeah, I think Wade's getting married in the next, like, week or two, and
Saturday.
Saturday. Okay, he's getting married Saturday. You know, I'm assuming LeBron's going to be there. Like, I don't think they hate each other. I think they understand what's going on. Like, I don't think there's animosity, but I think it would be a great series. I think it would be great storylines. I don't think about that Christmas game either. Like, this isn't like a Kobe versus Shaq Christmas game situation to me.
Right.
I'm also going to be pretty drunk on Christmas, even if I'm working. Don't tell anybody though.
Well, I'm pretty sure our boss's reaction would be like, and this is different from normal Hal, so.
Well, I'll be at home.
I think there's a lot of compelling storylines. I'm looking forward to I want a Wizards Cavs. I want to kick this quote unquote rivalry back up because the Wizards fans love hating LeBron and they get a chance to do it again.
And Soulja Boy is kind of back in the news because I think he threatened somebody on social media, so he can get, you know, he can get some spotlight back on him. This is great.
It's gonna happen. Yeah.
This is all coming together nicely.
2007 is coming back around with a vengeance. I had kind of been like, I mean, you know, I've been lukewarm on Powell for a while. Mm. And especially because, like, just physically he's pretty shot. But then, like, he went to Chicago, and I was like, okay, so they got Powell, all right. And then, like, I went back and was like, wait, the Bulls got Powell, which means that he has to do very little on the defensive end, and all he has to really focus on is being awesome in terms of finesse scoring. And they got McDermott. Oh, this team's going to be really good.
Yeah, and I think Snell's going to be really good this year. Maybe Jimmy Butler can figure out how to hit a shot again, because he was good 2 years ago at hitting shots. Like, and I do, like, you do, you look at the Powell addition and you think, like, all right, he has to be as good as Boozer was on defense. How hard could that be?
Right.
Like, the Boozer's, to Boozer's credit, and I think he gets killed a little too much, but to Boozer's credit, like, he was vocal, and that was probably his, like, his best attribute defensively, is he's loud, but he talks constantly on defense. Like, you go see a Bulls game in person, and, like, he and Noah are just talking constantly, calling out coverages, calling out whatever, and so, like, if Powell can somehow replicate that or just fill in to Boozer's slot and be decent, and even if they decide to bring him off the bench and start Taj, like, he just plugs in so easily to that team. And, like, he was mangled last year, but he was still pretty good. I mean, he put up, like, you know, he put up 17-9 meaningless points and rebounds on a horrendous team, but, like, he can still physically
17-9.
Yeah, and he made 48% of his shots, which you like him over 50%, but, like, for a guy who couldn't move, that's pretty good. And, you know, his passing's gonna, like, the passing between him and Noah, especially if Rose is there, Rose is healthy, and they've got Dunleavy spotting up, and I think that can help Jimmy Butler hit shots because he'll get better passes everywhere. And, you know, Boozer's a solid passer too. Like, he's a good passing big man, but, like, Powell is a next level, maybe two more levels than what Boozer can do. Like, you can, I really do believe you can open up this offense because, you know, what was it, I guess it was 3 or 4 years ago. Like, this was a top five offense in the league. Like, this Bulls team with Derrick Rose and all those parts, like, they were, and granted, they had Korver, and they had a lot of parts that fit together really well, but we forget, like, they've always been a defensive team, but there was a season where they were an awesome offensive team, and I think they can be that again.
And that's your front court down low is now just under 14 feet. Like, they have so much size.
Yeah.
They have so much size. And they still got Taj. They managed to keep Taj, and he's still going to do it. And then, you know, and we talked about
Mirotić can play, you know, like, gives him 20 minutes a game. Like, he can really play. Like, they've got some weapons.
And I think Tony Snell is going to end up taking Jimmy Butler's spot. Like, I think Tony Snell is legit. So, yeah. Brooklyn, Brooklyn, I think there's no way to argue that they didn't get worse.
Right.
But part of it's, if Brook Lopez comes back healthy, like, they can still be very, very good.
Yeah.
It just simply becomes a matter of, like, Brook Lopez is going to have to be the guy for them. That's, I think, is what's become kind of apparent. Is,
yeah, I think you got to give up on the idea that Deron Williams is going to return to form, right?
Which sucks, but
it does suck. Yeah, and if he does, great. Like, I hope he proves me wrong in that, but because I love watching really good Deron Williams, but it's been too many seasons of, all right, he's not going to have it again this year.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think the Eastern Conference is going to be a lot better. I think part of it also, it's like this narrative, and it was like the overreaching idea was just the East sucks. And there wasn't really a discussion of, like, well, why is the East bad? Like, what actually made the East so bad last year? And some of it was injury, and a lot of it was the Knicks. And then
I actually think they're going to be pretty good, like, relatively.
You know, like, 40 wins wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
And that could be in line for – that very well could be in line for a playoff spot. Like, between 35 and 40 wins is what I peg them for. Like, yeah.
You're going to give – I mean, they have offensive talent. You're going to give a lot of offensive talent an actual system to play in. I think that can be good. I think, you know, that can be another Maverick situation of, like, yeah, we can't defend at all, but we can score.
Yeah, like, they have system and they have shooting. That's what they have.
Yeah.
And a lot of last year, though, was teams like because I went back and actually for the Hawks, I looked at what the standings were when Horford went down and was stunned because I was like, oh, yeah, the Hawks. I was like, yeah, so I was right. The Hawks were in third and they had a 2-game lead over the Pistons.
Yeah.
The Pistons were fourth on December 27th.
Yeah.
And then because the Wizards and the Nets and the Raptors all started out horribly.
Yeah.
So if you basically take out the first 2 months of the year, the East really wasn't that bad. They just had a whole bunch of horrible starts. But that's part of it is everyone like – and I don't know. I'm lukewarm on them anyway. But the Raptors are bringing back the exact same team that made that last year, that made the playoffs. That's the exact same team. It's Lowry and DeRozan with Valanciunas with another year on him. There's every reason. I mean, it's hard to argue that they're going to be demonstrably better, but it's also harder to argue they're going to be any worse.
Right, and I think they could be the same level of a good basketball team and probably like be the seventh seed. Just because I think the East is a more competitive balance, and the difference between the third seed and the seventh seed in the East might be two games. Like I really think like you might have it might be that close. It's kind of like the Western Conference where I could say, oh, I think the Warriors are going to be the seventh seed, and Warriors fans might freak out. And it's like, well, I'm only picking them to finish two games behind the third seed. You know, right. Like I think there's a swing there. It's just that, you know, you have to shave off 10 wins from the East to the West, and you get that same balance. But I do think, like, this Toronto team could still be very good, very dangerous. I am a little concerned about Lowry post-contract. He's probably a big enough – and I mean this with the greatest respect. Like, I think he's probably a big enough a-hole to still, like, want to kill whoever's out there even after he's gotten a big contract. But, you know, there's always that concern with a guy a little bit. But I think that's a good – I still think they're a really good team. They've got, you know, weapons all over the floor. I think they can play defense under Dwayne Casey. Like, that's still a team that you could say they're going to finish third, they're going to finish eighth, and I would think that you're correct, and I would think that they're going to be very good in whatever seed.
So you feel like you've got a lock on the West?
I really do. I really feel like it's – I don't know if it's clear-cut, but I feel very comfortable in my view of it.
The only things I know is that I think it's going to be San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Los Angeles, Clippers, and the Mavs. That's the only thing that I know really for certain is that that's going to be 1 through 4. 5 through 10, I'm real shaky on.
It's tough. I mean, I think your playoff teams from last year are your playoff teams again this year. I don't think we're going to see a team jump up into that top eight. I don't think we're going to see a team fall out as long as there's not a major injury, right? And so
I'm kind of counting on that because that's the way it's gone. Like,
yeah.
Like, there's always that year where you just, like, nothing goes right for you.
Like, I kind of think Memphis is going to be, like, a top four team. Like, they would probably, if I had to pick today, like, I would probably think that they squeak out the four seed because I just, if they're healthy, like, that team's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's hard to pick against them, right? Like, they've got continuity,
yeah.
A really strong roster. They legitimately – and I don't know. I'm uncomfortable with this. It was like – I was used to them being this horrible team from inside and out, and I was like, well, okay, at least now they're top-heavy. And it's like, all right, well, they're really, really good. And now it's like – and then it was like, all right, well, they're top-heavy, and they've got some depth, but they haven't developed anybody young, and that's going to be a problem eventually. And now it's like, okay, so they're top-heavy. They've got their guys locked in who are not elite but just, like, sub-elite. They've got good depth at almost every position, and now they have a bunch of young guys who can actually play.
Yeah.
What is happening?
Right. They're an actual organization.
Yeah, and then yet still they're kind of an actual organization. For the next 30 seconds.
On the court, sure.
Until Para has a Red Bull, they're fine.
Right.
I still don't think that they're going to make a top four just because I think Dallas, the Clippers, OKC, and San Antonio are going to be that good. I do think there'll be an injury somewhere. Houston's really vexing for me because
I think they're going to be awesome.
Like, on paper, they got worse, and I'm looking at their roster and being like, maybe they got better. Like, maybe just in terms of what they do. They got better because Morey was pretty smart in that after Parsons was gone, he was like, well, we're going to get defense. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Like, if we're no longer going to burn the stores down with offense, let's go get some defense. And so we got Ariza, and they basically picked up every big, mean, nasty dude on the planet.
And I really look at 4 through 8 in the West, and you can even extend that to 10, like you said. You could convince me that the Mavs, the Grizzlies, the Rockets, the Blazers, or the Warriors are any of those teams. You could say that team is definitely going to get home court advantage in the first round. I would say, okay, that doesn't sound crazy to me. Like, I think that's how competitive it is. This Rockets team, like, I know we hate Dwight Howard and we hate James Harden, and this James Harden conversation has gotten really weird to me, because, like, it just seems, it seems so unnecessary how, like, people have turned on, and I get that aesthetically his game isn't pleasing anymore, and that really frustrates people, and there's the flopping, and we hate flopping as long as it's not happening on, or, you know, as long as it's happening on, you know, someone who doesn't play for our favorite team, like, we hate it and all that stuff. But that team does have a ton of talent. I'm a huge Isaiah Cannon fan. I think he fits in better with what they want to do than Jeremy Lin did, even though I recognize Lin is a better player. I think you can look at the growth of Monte Yunus and the growth of Terrence Jones, and I'm not even a Terrence Jones guy, but I think those guys fit next to, you know, next to what they have. And I kind of do think that, you know, Parsons to Ariza is a downgrade, but this seems more of a team atmosphere to me. Yeah. I even think Alonzo G, I think he's still, I don't think they waived him, right? Like, yeah, he's still on the team. Like, I think Alonzo G can be a decent role player for them off the bench.
The only thing it comes down to for me is, it's McHale. That's my question.
Sure, that probably is the question with them, right?
Yeah, can McHale coach the defense to be good enough? The Harden thing is interesting because I agree with you that it's gotten out of hand. I've really come to loathe the fact that we used to treat defense as if it didn't matter and it was all about offense, and then the internet kind of got smart, but then it got too smart for itself, and now it's all about can you defend, and everyone ignores like how efficient you are on offense or how much of a volume scorer you are and just how much production you provide. Like, there's got to be a point where like the goal needs to be a balanced player. That needs to be the goal. Harden's defense was so bad, I legitimately did not feel that he was an all-team NBA last year. Like, I just – that was how bad it was. I think that he too often is targeting trying to get the call and not making a legitimate effort to score.
Yeah, he hunts contact every time.
And it's not about the flopping. I'm just like, dude, you're costing yourself points. Like, because you're not always getting the call, and when you don't, you just look like you're – drunk running into someone. Like, you're just that dude that stumbles into their friends and they have to go, whoa buddy, okay, back on the sidewalk. That's what Harden looked like at times last year. If he actually gets back to, and maybe a lot of it's just going to be balance, I'm not sure who's going to take the ball handling load, but if they can find some sort of balance on the offense and he could be a little bit more targeted, there's no reason that they can't be really good again. I don't know. I'm back on the train. I hopped off, and now I'm back on the Pelicans wagon. I just can't get away from it. Anthony Davis is just – I just keep being like, you know, what's the difference? Like, well, you have to have, like, a super elite player. Anthony Davis is it. Like, no, they're going to be healthy this year, and then everything changes.
I can't buy into the Eric Gordon, Tyreke Evans combo yet. I just – like, and I like both of those players separately, and I like either guy on that team in some capacity, but for some reason, like, those pieces just, like, I tried to talk myself into it last year, and they had so many injuries, and it's hard to really judge it, but, like, I look at everything there, and I'm just like, I don't see it. Like, I know Holiday's great, I love the Ashik pickup for them, because that team was so bad defensively, and Anthony Davis didn't even matter on defense. Like, he was a good he was a pretty good defender last year. I wouldn't say he was great, even though I think he'll be a great defender for, like, I don't know, the rest of time. But he couldn't really impact because there were so many injuries and there was such a lack of continuity. And
because
so,
Brian Roberts was his perimeter defender a lot of the time.
Right, who I could get a good shot off against Brian Roberts. I'm not saying, oh, I could score on that guy, but I feel like any of us could get a good shot off against him because he's like if I had James Harden's effort on defense, I feel like. I think that's what he translated to last year. But they had so many problems, but to me is Ashik and his continuity going to fix that defense enough in 1 year? And I'm having a hard time buying into Monty Williams as a coach with that squad. And you know, they have plenty of pieces. It's something weird. I think it's with them, it's, you know, there are some teams that will come together and I'm like, I believe in that team right away. And I think for them, they're going to be that team. It's like, I just need them to show me for 3 months. Like, show it for 3 months and I'll buy in for the rest of the season. But it's something where they just don't have the credit built up, if that makes sense. And even, like, that sounds like kind of a toolish thing to say. Maybe it is, but, like, that it just – that's what it feels like with them for me.
Well, there's got to be. Like, that's got to be part of it, right? Like you've got to – I think especially with young teams, you've got to prove it. You know, we all doubted the Thunder until they proved it.
Right.
And I think the same thing is going to happen with them. And a lot – and the problem is that a lot of young teams, like you say – it's like, oh, they've got the promise and they've got the ability. And you say, well, they got to prove it. And a lot of teams just don't. Like the young teams just don't ever come together. And then later you're like, wow, that team had a lot of good young talent.
Yeah, but it's really hard to do. For me, like, I'm looking at Denver and I'm having a hard time talking myself out of them. Not that I think they're going to be a playoff team, but you look at just everything they went through last year and it feels like they've kind of like they've reloaded by just having guys get healthy. And it's a point where, like, I don't think they're a playoff team, but, like, I think they're going to be a pain in the ass.
See, this is a huge debate in town. The idea of management and coaching, that is the mantra, is we were just hurt. That is the mantra. 100%, that is the story, is we were just hurt. We would have been fine if we hadn't gotten hurt. JaVale got hurt, and I don't know that you can definitively say that was a good or a bad thing. We just don't know. Just, right. Like, take JaVale out of the conversation for right now. Gallo was out. That sucks. That was bad. That was a significant injury. My problem is they had the full complement of the other guys. They had those guys until January. The injury started happening after they fell apart going into January. They had everything that bad happened to them with Andre Miller and the road. They had a bad road trip and like everything had fallen apart. And then they got hurt. And then it just kept compiling. And so it winds up looking like they were just hurt. But at the same time, it's just really hard to go, God, Ty Lawson, Aaron Aflalo, Danilo Gallinari, Kenneth Faried, who has just been phenomenal, as much of a jackass as he is to the media, Kenneth Faried is an absolutely incredible player. Like, I'm just gotten to the point where I'm like, it's cool. Like, he's so good. Like, I can't hold it against him. He gets to be there because he's put so much together mentally, I think, in terms of his game. It's just really impressive. And so him and then whoever you want at center, whether that's JaVale, Mozgov, it's not going to be Nurkic, but sure, if you want to pretend, any of those guys, then you're not even getting to Wilson Chandler, Randy Foy, Nate Robinson. They signed Eric Green, who I like a lot as a third point guard. They've got actual point guards and they've got good depth and some size.
Gary Harris plays both guard positions. If they, you know, he's a rookie, but he can play. I like Gary Harris a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's hard to look at that and say, and that was one thing I did. I asked Conley about it. I was like, you're three deep now, and that was definitely part of the idea. There's still talk that they can make a move, which if anything big comes available, they will do it. But just the addition of Aflalo, yeah, it's hard to be like, are they really not going to be a playoff team? I'm just looking at this roster, at the West, and being like, God, like if it's not going to be Houston, who's going to fall?
Yeah,
you know, does Golden State revolt under Kerr? That seems unlikely. You know, Portland
just seems too solid. Like I can't see a scenario unless something horrible happens. Like I can't see a scenario in which they fall out. Like that, right. That team just seems so good. For me, like looking at Denver, and again, like I don't think they're a playoff team, but I just think that they're going to be like in the hunt all year. But like they won 36 games last year, which isn't good, but Randy Foy played the most minutes for them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big – like, Randy Foy played for the most minutes for you, and you won 36 games in the West. Like, yeah. that's really good. Like, that's still – like, you just have so much talent, and we haven't even mentioned Phoenix yet.
Yeah, who I'm not – one, we don't know what – we have no idea what's going to happen with this Eric Bledsoe thing.
Yes. I know that it's, you know, been stressful for their fans and whatever, but, like, this Greg Monroe, Eric Bledsoe versus restricted free agency – debacle. I love it because I appreciate the theory of restricted free agency, but I get so frustrated with the application of it because I feel like players and agents don't set the market for themselves early enough. Like you look at how Gordon Hayward and his agent handled free agency; they handled it perfectly. They went out there, they found a team with cap space who's looking to add another big time player, whether you want to believe it or not. Like he was billed as a big time restricted free agent this summer. And they went out there and said, you know, our guy wants to sign with you. And the Hornets went out and made a max offer sheet to him, and the Jazz had to match. And that's how restricted free agency has to go. like you have to set the market for yourself because there's no incentive for the team to do it. You know, like it's rare that there's an incentive for the team because you don't want to bid too high too early and there's no market and then you kind of get screwed. But I do like this idea, and it's always been like no one's going to take the risk and take the qualifying offer. Well, we may have two really good young guys who are, you know, Greg Monroe says he's going to. It looks like Eric Bledsoe is going to, you know, maybe go for the qualifying offer. Like, this could kind of set that whole thing, like, on its head, which is exciting to me because I like the chaos.
Yeah, that is pretty exciting. I think, you know, I'm a little frustrated, I think, with Phoenix in particular because Phoenix came out publicly as early as December and said, we're going to re-sign him.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what, we're going to re-sign him. And he followed that up several times throughout the year. Like, I kept writing the posts about how McDonough was just like, this is happening. We are going to re-sign Eric Bledsoe. And I get that the Suns are like, well, the market hasn't been set. Why are we going to overpay when there's nothing to pressure us? And it's like, so you don't piss off the guy that is pivotal to your future.
Right.
That's why. Because, like, you know, maybe it's been overblown. It sure seems like there's some bad blood. Like, Eric Bledsoe seems like, you know what? Like,
It's also been weird that Sarver has come out and made so many comments about it. Like, shut the hell up and let him do all the time. Let Bledsoe, like, piss people off or soil the relationship publicly or whatever. Like, you don't go out there and say it.
Right. And, like, yeah, I did think it was weird, though, because when he was like, we haven't talked to him in 4 months. And I was like, 4 months?
the season's been over for three.
I was like, is he Batman? What is happening? Like, how is this possible? So that's weird. You know, the Greg Monroe deal, I think, is probably – I have a lot more, I think, respect for even Monroe than I do for Bledsoe in this situation. Because, like, the Bledsoe, at least I could be like, well, you know what? Like, you had one really good season next to Dragic, but you were still the second best guard on the team, and you had a significant injury after having a reputation for having injury problems coming in. Like, maybe you're just not going to get the money and you need to deal with that. Versus Monroe, I feel like Monroe's like, you drafted me. I was the only good player on these god-awful teams with these horrible coaches that were having mutinies in the locker room because of the veterans. I've dealt with all of this crap, and then you go out and you sign Josh Smith to basically screw up everything. And all I'm asking is for you to and then you make it pretty clear throughout the entire season that you're in no real rush to match an offer for me. Like, just let him go. That's what I don't get. It's like this can't be this hard to figure out a sign and trade. There are too many teams that have reportedly shown interest. Like, yeah. It just feels like the Pistons are putting a hammer to him, and it's like, you don't even really want this. Like, you're committed to Josh Smith. You know, move one of them.
Yeah,
you know,
and who knows how even far it got, but like there was a whole rumor of, you know, they tried to early, or his agent tried to get, you know, a sign and trade working with the Thunder, and I immediately was like, oh, I like that idea.
Yep,
like that would be fun.
Who's had the worst offseason?
It's gotta be Miami, just because, I mean, you lost LeBron, and like I had arguments with a couple of people. Because I did the offseason report for Miami, and I gave him a D+, even though I glowed about like kind of the way they rallied from losing LeBron, because I do think they did a really good job. But like, I just, you lose LeBron, you have gone from, you know, title contender, arguably title favorites in a lot of situations, to you're a pretty good team in the East. And I just, like, I know that's very nitpicky in a way, but like, you can't lose the best player in the world.
How about this? Who had the worst offseason based off of their decisions, like, that were under their control?
All right, that's fair. The Warriors? You didn't give up Klay Thompson.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know if it's the worst, but it's up there.
And they are crowing about it too. They're like, yeah, we didn't give up Klay Thompson. Yeah, we got the Splash Brothers back, and I feel like everyone's looking at him being like, he didn't get Kevin Love.
He's on Team USA default.
Like, Kevin Love's not on Team USA default.
I think, I just talked about how I think I agree, like, in a way I think Houston got better, but they kind of put themselves in a tough situation by those decisions, because it was always going to be sign a guy and then match Parsons. Yeah. And then they signed a guy who you could put next to Parsons and didn't match Parsons.
Yeah.
Like, I think that...
They missed out on Bosch, which, like, that was... The entire internet was rooting for Bosch to Houston. Like, yeah. That would have just been so good for everyone.
I don't think that's their fault, though. Like, they made a competitive offer and he decided to stay because Miami upped their offer. You know, like, I don't really fault them for that. Like, that sucks. That's kind of in that bad, like, oh, you lost LeBron category. But Houston losing out on Bosch, like, I don't know that they actually had him.
Sacramento is another team I would put on the list for maybe worse. No one knows what they're doing. Like, Zach Lowe penned an entire article about no one knows what the Kings are doing.
Yeah, I mean, I defended them with the trades last year, like the Derek Williams trade, the Rudy Gay trade. I was like, they're getting as much talent as they can, or like potential talent, and then they're just going to see what's going to happen. And then they swapped out Isaiah Thomas for Darren Collison. I was like, what are you doing?
It's amazing because I started thinking about this yesterday because, again, I was going over those per possession stuff, and I looked and saw that for 100 possessions, since 1974, among all centers, DeMarcus Cousins had the 17th best scoring season in NBA history. Like, yeah, that's not bad. At his age, per possession, he had like an obscene rebound number too. So he had a 26.1 PER, tops among centers playing 30 minutes last year. So DeMarcus Cousins had this unbelievable season. Isaiah Thomas had this unbelievable season. You got a quality half year out of Rudy Gay. You won 28 games.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have much talent outside of those guys.
Yeah.
They really don't. Like, Derek Williams did nothing after they traded. Like, he was supposed to be a guy of, like, all right, new scenario, no pressure now, go out and be a player, and he's not a player.
Yeah.
And, you know, McLemore struggled. I think he'll be fine. Like, I'm still really high on Ben McLemore, but I think he's going to be okay.
But, so are they. Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't, you know, he didn't do anything. Like, they were playing Travis Outlaw.
They signed Darren Collison.
They signed Darren Collison.
When like, me, the king of the Darren Collison fan club, is like, oh, no.
Yeah, I think it's... when we get to a point where you're like, I don't know about this Darren Collison signing, that's when you're officially, like, in this oh, my God zone.
Yeah, it's funny because like the Lakers added Carlos Boozer, who is a good player, no matter how bad you think he might be over, like in various things, he is a above average player.
Right,
I would qualify him as good.
Absolutely.
I do think Jeremy Lin is a good point guard. He's better than what they had last year, except maybe Jordan Farmar is maybe the only guy that was maybe better than him last year. Blake was a better shooter, but not as a point guard. Jordan Hill is. He's active. He's basically like he's a B-level Kenneth Faried, which maybe that's not saying much, but it's something. They brought back – what else did they get? They drafted Julius Randle, and they're getting Kobe Bryant back. And still, I'm just like, I don't know how many games this team's going to win.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they added 8 or 9 wins to their total, but that makes them a 35-36 win team.
Yeah.
And that's like – that kind of seems like best-case scenario, right?
Right.
And the whole, like, I guess I used to think Byron Scott was a pretty good coach. Now, even, like this side, like, I don't know what to think.
Yeah.
I know he's not impressed me in his last couple stints.
The Cleveland, I looked at Cleveland's defensive numbers, and they were so much worse than I expected. They were so much worse. Like, you can talk all you want about the talent he had and them rebuilding, but... there's a different, like, the Magic have had bad rosters, and they've still managed, they were 17th in defense last year. So, which, by the way, that's another team that, like, I'm going to drastically overshoot on my win totals for them. Like, I just know I'm going to way overshoot them.
Speaking of win totals, the Bovada updated their stuff or whatever, and because the Timberwolves were involved in their, like, their thing, like, they have their win total at, like, 30.5, and part of me was like, 30.5 is not that many wins, but then I just realized, like, there's really, I mean, Peck's your go-to scorer. This is probably not a 30-win team.
We haven't talked about the Wolves. Like, they're gonna be a lot of fun.
I don't know how you could have wanted a better outcome.
Yeah.
Realistically, Love's gonna leave. They went out and got the guy that everyone was tanking for. You know, this allegedly can't miss prospect. Who's gonna like electrify arenas and stuff? And like, he has a lot of work to do to get to being a great player. That's for certain. But like, how can you not like at least the direction they've taken this team after the last direction was a dead end?
Their poster that they put out after the trade was cool. It had like just Black Shadow and the players against it, and then it was like, you know, it's kind of funny because it's like LaVine, Wiggins, Bennett, and it's like, oh, young raw guys, like you don't really know what they're going to be, and then Thaddeus Young.
I think Thaddeus Young's in a better situation.
Right? That's the thing. He's like, Thaddeus Young's going to be like, yay! Oh.
It's going to be like, oh my God, I forgot what it's like to win 27 games.
Exactly. That's what's. Last year, you predicted 9 wins for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah.
And they won 19. I'm going to tell you right now, I think I'm predicting 7.
7? No, they can't. 7's too low.
I'm telling you, man. I don't know. I don't even know these dudes. Like, you and I talk a lot of basketball. That's pretty much – that takes up a huge chunk of our time. I do not know these dudes. Like, everyone's just like, yeah, but Nerlens Noel. And I'm like, the lanky center who had to have his shot rebuilt who missed the entire year? That's your guy? That's it?
I was so not convinced with that roster last year that even when they got to 8-19 with, what, 51 games to play?
Yeah, you were still...
60 games. I was like, I'd still like my chances.
Well, let's see how this works. Like, I mean, it's going to be bad. It's going to be real, real bad.
I got to see who's on their roster now. Because I don't really know after Michael Carter-Williams and Tony Roten.
Jason Richardson.
And he had a major knee injury.
Yep.
Like two seasons ago?
Yeah.
He had a major knee injury that, I mean, he's not going to do anything.
It's been 2 years. They had Eric Maynor. Nope, he got waived.
Is Arnett Moultrie like their fifth best guy?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Seven might be too high.
Hollis Thompson has the most games played for the Sixers of any player on roster.
I like Hollis Thompson. I do too. I love him as like my 11th or 12th guy.
Exactly. Like, Elliot Williams, Henry Sims.
Here's a thought that just went in my head, and I can't believe it happened. I thought, oh, they don't even have Pierre Jackson because he tore his knee.
Yeah.
Like, that's a loss.
Yeah.
That's a significant loss for them.
Casper Ware.
That sounds made up.
Brandon Davies. That sounds made up.
Oh, wasn't he the guy that got busted for having sex at BYU?
Like, this is, like, instead of the NBA 2K create a player, this is the create a team.
They do have Alexei Shved.
Oh my God, they do have Alexei Shved and Luke. Poor Luke Richard-Mbamute.
He can't catch a break with getting traded.
Poor guy. Although the story with him and Embiid is really cool. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't seen it. I mean, I know they're countrymen.
He's basically like mentored him. Like the first time he tried professional basketball was when he attended Mbamute's camp in Cameroon.
Oh.
Yeah. Like it's a really cool story.
Do you think this is a thing where it's not even the rookie, like the veteran rookie dynamic, but it's like, I'm your prince. You have to do what I say.
No.
Mbamute's a prince of Cameroon.
Maybe. Sure.
I've been watching a lot of Game of Thrones lately. I've catching up on Game of Thrones, and it's I don't know how to judge like political things in other countries now. Everything's the realm to me.
But guys, like people have been like, well, no, they're going to be better because they've got Noel and MCW with another year. And I'm like, the games that they won in the first half of the season were because of Evan Turner and Thaddeus Young and Spencer Hawes. That was the deal. Like, yeah. MCW was good, but veteran guys are going to win more games than young teams. And this team somehow got younger and worse.
Yeah, this is not an NBA roster.
I just don't know how much I'm going to be able to watch them.
They've got like 30 million committed to this roster.
31. If they decline all options for next season, 4.9 million plus whatever Shved's making.
Shved's an expiring.
Oh my God.
Shved and Mbamute are expiring.
Hinkie's gone way out on this limb. Like, he's just like...
I'm in on this, like, be as bad as possible.
Yeah, like, yeah, I was in it for a year, not for a decade.
It's really to the point, too, where he's like, he is daring them to switch this lotto system.
Yeah, he really is.
There was that story that leaked out a couple months ago, where it was, or maybe a month ago, where it was they're thinking about making, you know, the five or six worst teams, like, unweighted to where there is no advantage. And Hinkie went out there and cut more salary off the roster. Like, didn't start saying, like, all right, maybe I should hedge just in case because it won't matter. Like, he said, no, we're going to get worse. We've burned it all down. We can salt the earth now.
God, going to be bad. The octopus story is pretty much my favorite story of the offseason.
It was great. It's, there could have been some animosity between Minneapolis and Cleveland as cities because, you know, you're losing your star player. Cleveland wasn't crazy about giving up Andrew Wiggins in the trade, but they've managed to, like, realize the good in all this, and they're still going to move K-Love the Octopus to...
I'll say this. Yeah, there could have been that animosity, and it's nice about the Octopus thing, but if the Cavs don't win a title and Wiggins ends up as a Hall of Fame player, the salt from Cleveland will just be... enormous. They don't take that kind of stuff well. They don't do well with that. They're still mad about the Deion Waiters Bradley Beal comparisons.
No, that seems like a very rational fan base. They should be fine. It's not like they were tracking airplanes or anything.
I can't say anything bad. They got him.
Yeah, they got him.
I'm in the same place with Dan Gilbert. I'm like, you know what? He got him. So good on him. Good for him. Yeah, so I don't know. We'll be back talking about news eventually, and then win totals and you're not probably doing win totals probably next month. So
yeah, we got we're finishing up on our off-season reports. I think we've got six left.
Yeah,
check those out at cbssports.com.
And then we'll do the Elite 100.
Elite 100,
which is always pointless and yet generates traffic. So
people love lists.
They do. They're very popular.
Yeah.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Matt.